Well, I'm looking forward to this one. I am so fascinated by things that have happened in Egypt, both what we would call mysterious prehistory and events, of course, that have happened thereafter. And it's always fun and exciting to get a different guest on who has a different perspective of what he or she believes happened many thousands of years ago. And we've got one coming up in a moment, Edward Malkowski. His work is called Before the Pharaohs, Egypt's Mysterious Prehistory. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Edward Malkowski grew up in central Illinois, graduated in 1984 from the University of Illinois. His interests are ancient history, particularly the origins of man and civilization. He is also interested in science as it relates to the metaphysical as well as the physical. In other words, sacred science. And he is our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program, Edward. How are you?
Thank you, George. I'm fine, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Likewise, likewise. Champaign, Illinois, huh?
That's correct.
So I assume you go to Springfield a lot, or you know where that is, right?
I know that is. I used to live there for about 4 years, so back in the mid-90s.
There's a little town between Springfield and Decatur called Iliopolis.
I'm aware of it, yes.
I used to have a little horse farm there a long time ago.
Oh, fantastic.
A gorgeous area. And, you know, years ago during the war, that's where they would make munitions.
And, that's correct.
Yep. And they still have some of those munition bunkers out there and everything else. But it's good to have you on the program. How did you get interested in Egyptian history and prehistory?
Well, my first book, Sons of God, Daughters of Men, was primarily concerned with the early stories of Genesis. And what I was trying to do was trying to find out why these stories were written. And my approach was to overlap ancient texts as well as archaeology and try and find a common ground that would explain these texts. And as I finished writing that book, I sent a copy to John Anthony West and started an email conversation with him.
You went right to the top, didn't you?
I went right to the top. And then I bought a copy of his Serpent in the Sky and was just flabbergasted at how he viewed ancient Egypt and what ancient Egypt actually had to offer from a historical perspective.
The things that we know about Egypt, so many different people have come up with their own different theories about the pyramids, about who the Egyptians were. I mean, they run the gamut from, did they come from Mars? Did they have extraterrestrial help? Were they just smart people? All kinds of theories. And we're going to talk about a lot of them tonight with you, Edward, and obviously get your take on all of this. As you did the research, did you come across any problems or stumbling blocks that were difficult for you?
Well, sure. The number one stumbling block as far as history is concerned, and this is more of ancient history and prehistory than it is current history, is that in ancient history, all is theory. We really don't know exactly what happened. And trying to figure out what did happen is really kind of a hard thing to do.
What are some of the things we do know about Egypt? What are some of the things that we've been taught since our days in school about the pharaohs and the pyramids?
Well, what we've been taught is that about 3000 BC, two different areas of Egypt, the north and the south, became united under the pharaoh Menes, and that was the beginning of Egyptian history. And that history spanned about 3000 years, which is fantastic in itself. But also what they taught is that Egypt had a religion that involved thousands of gods, approximately 2,000, and that they were primitive and that true civilization didn't start until later.
You know, I've always been fascinated at how these pharaohs got to the power position that they held during these days. Was it a family inheritance situation, like royalty, where it was just handed down from father to son? What do you think? I mean, how did they assume the throne?
Well, from what I can tell, in the early part of Egyptian history, the pharaoh was actually part of a matriarchal descent, and that it was the house of based on the mother and not necessarily the father, and that's how these pharaohs came to be. Now, there are a couple of problem periods. There's what's called the first intermediate period and the second intermediate period, where there's some political turmoil that happens, and history is kind of vague there, but then the civilization comes back out, and we have a new pharaoh, and life goes on.
And you've got some heavy hitters who have endorsed your work, not only John Anthony West, but our friend Christopher Dunn, who believes the pyramids, the big one at Giza, is a power plant. You generated a lot of interest with your work. How did that happen?
What happened was about 2 years ago, when I had started talking with John Anthony West through email, I had thought to myself, there's been a lot of events that have happened in the past 15 years. There's been a lot of research about Egypt, and this research is kind of astounding. And I thought it would make a very good story. So as I was doing my research, I knew, of course, about Egypt. I had to write about the pyramids. So I had purchased Chris Dunn's book, The Giza Power Plant. And it came in the mail. And I was sitting here at my desk working. And my son was in here with me. And he was reading the back cover. And he said, "Hey, Dad, this guy lives in Danville, Illinois." I said, "You got to be kidding me."
Okay, yeah.
Danville's only 30 miles away.
That's right.
So that's how I met Chris Dunn, and we met a few times and discussed his power plant theory. And at that point in time, after reading his book, it was clear to me that there was an ancient science long ago that has since disappeared.
Well, there's no doubt about that, Edward. Of course, if you talk to Zahi Hawass, who heads up the Egyptian antiquities, he'll swear up and down that these pyramids were built by manpower only, and they were indeed done by the Egyptians. And he won't budge on that either. So, you know, part of it's ego, I'm sure.
Well, there's different models of history. The standard model of history today is what I call linear evolution, and that's where mankind evolved long ago, and there was this slow progression from ape to man. And from the evidence I can see, and this includes the Sphinx, it includes Naptopleia, as well as the Giza power plant, that may not be the case.
The Sphinx and the power plant, the pyramids, built at least 5,000 B.C.,
That's
about 7,000 years ago, maybe even further. Can you give me an idea, this is just based on you, what you think Egypt looked like during this time period, and who were the Egyptians at that time?
Well, we know that about 3,000 B.C., the climate started to change drastically, and northern Africa became a desert, and since then has become more and more dry. But before then, from 3,000 B.C., going all the way back to about 10,000 B.C., Egypt was a little bit more green than it is now. They had rainfall. They didn't have a lot of rainfall, but they had rainfall that was approximately like our southwest United States. So there was...
And they had areas that were pretty lush, right?
That's correct, and there were lakes and playas in different areas, and this was actually a great resource for civilization. So who the Egyptians were, that's a much bigger question. That's been battled for many, many years. My own opinion on that is that the first Egyptians were actually African.
Okay.
And they had always been there.
All right, and the pyramids themselves and the structures and the technology, where do you think that came from? Do you think it was extraterrestrial, or do you think it was already on this planet somehow? Maybe, as Michael Cremo says in his work, Forbidden Archaeology, mankind has been around much longer than a lot of people think.
I would have to agree with Michael Cremo, definitely. This starts to get into the area of exactly what is man? Who are we? Where do we come from? And this gets into the area of consciousness, because consciousness is it's a fundamental part of reality, just as much as the first, second, and third dimensions are. It's something that's a big mystery to science right now.
There is a tie-in, which I find to be very fascinating, that you point out between the Mayans up there in the Yucatan and the Egyptians, about this similarity, that in some form or fashion, they were related. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that story starts a long time ago in the late 19th century. There was an archaeologist by the name of Augustus Le Plongeon.
Sounds French.
That's correct. Okay. He was French, and he moved to the United States. And actually, he did all kinds of things. He was a photographer. He had some inventions in photography that were really fantastic. But about sometime during the 1870s, he and his wife moved to the Yucatan, and he wanted to research man culture. And what he found was very bizarre, as from what he says. He believed that the Mayans, long, long time ago, actually had a relationship with the Egyptians. And there was this one specific queen named Queen Mu, who was in a fight between two brothers for her love, and one brother killed the other, and she decided to flee and go to Egypt. Actually, I'm sorry, she decided to flee and go to Atlantis. Huh. And Atlantis wasn't there, so she kept going, and she wound up in Egypt. And as a testimony to her lover that was killed, she actually had the Sphinx built.
Now, is this myth, or do you think this actually happened?
Well, I really don't know if that happened or not. There's really no way to tell. But there's some striking similarities between Egyptian culture and Mayan culture.
Okay, such as?
Well, one of the most common ones is the winged circle. Above the doors in Egypt and some of their temples, they would have a circle, and then they would have wings on each side of it. Well, the Mayans had the same thing, and they also had similar headdresses.
All right, and what are the odds of two different cultures just creating the same kind of image or logo? Probably not likely.
No, probably not.
How about the structures?
Well, structures there are a little bit different. The Mayans built pyramids, yes, and actually the Mayans actually built more pyramids than the Egyptians. But for the most part, the Mayan pyramids seem to be used more for ceremonial and religious purposes as opposed to those in Egypt. Those pyramids in Egypt are actually solid structures. There's only about 10 of them, and they're completely solid, and they have the passageways and chambers carved out inside of them.
So the French explorer's theory was that the Mayans basically went to Egypt.
That's correct.
And maybe then carried some of the same things, the same history that they had. That doesn't explain, though, the incredible ability to build these pyramids.
Because, no, and that's a big mystery to today.
Absolutely. I mean, I just can't believe those pyramids, where the stone was cut out by hand, and placed in there. I mean, there are areas within the pyramids, as you know, Edward, that are so accurate, put together. I mean, it's like it was cut with some high cutting instrument. There's no way a man could do that by hand. There's just no way.
That's absolutely true. And if you look at it from another angle, from a business angle, how much today would it cost to build a pyramid like that?
Oh, my God.
Probably in the tens of billions of dollars.
Would we even have the equipment to do it?
No, we wouldn't. I mean, we do have the technology where we could make the equipment to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, getting those 10 to 50-ton blocks of stone up that high is a huge problem. So, you know, we really don't know how they did it. I've seen documentaries where, you know, they have some people come out and they put this 5-ton stone on a sled, and then they move it, and then they say that's how the Egyptians did it. But, you know, if you watch it closely, you see that's ridiculous. There's no way that they moved it like that.
Not only that, we're talking about thousands of blocks here. You know,
yeah, well, thousands, we're talking millions. You know, it took about 30 years to build the pyramids.
Do you believe that the Belt of Orion, those three stars, are matching the pyramids at Giza?
I don't know for sure. There is definitely an astrological...
Graham Hancock, I think, believes that.
Right, right. It could be true. I don't see any reason why it couldn't be true. But I really don't know for sure.
All right, let's spend some time talking about, if we can, the Sphinx, because this is a structure that has baffled a lot of people. First of all, that structure, is the head on the Sphinx, was that always there or was that changed? Because I've heard a number of different stories.
Boy, it looks like it was changed.
It has that appearance.
It has that appearance. And it also looks like when it was recarved, that the face is actually an African face.
It might have been, what, like a lion or some kind of animal initially? Because the body is, right?
That's correct. I've heard one theory that says it could have been a dog.
Okay.
Now, okay. I don't.
What made them, you know, a lot of this is all guess. Why'd they change the face?
Well, my guess is that the Sphinx is part of a pre-existing culture that goes back many thousands of years. And if you've read Stephen Mailer's book, The Land of Osiris, he claims that it goes back something like, 70,000 years. So what could have happened is that as society began to rebuild, they decided to change that carving to the face of a man instead of a lion, sometime around 3000 BC.
And the Sphinx, of course, has been there way before the Great Pyramids, right?
Right. And this is something new. I know, back in 1991, John Anthony West and Dr. Robert Schock went over there and actually kind of redated the Sphinx. But it kind of goes farther back than that. There was a man by the name of René Schwaller de Lubitz. He was born in 1877 and passed away in 1961. And his early in his life, he was a philosopher, a hermeticist and alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
And on vacation, this was somewhere around the late 1930s, he was on vacation in Egypt, and he noticed that a certain inscription of the pharaoh was in a right triangle. It was a 3-4-5 triangle. And that really piqued his curiosity because he was a Pythagorean and believed in that number system. So he spent the next 10 or 11 years actually living in Egypt and studying specifically the temple at Luxor, but he also went around to other places. And he was the first one to notice that it looks like the Sphinx has been eroded by water.
Yes, and I've seen some pictures of that as well, and there's no doubt you can see the trickling. And, of course, as you were saying, the water really wasn't around for thousands of years ago, before.
That's correct. And it really wasn't around anywhere from now until 10,000 years ago. If you want a lot of rainfall, you have to go way back to before the Ice Age. Here we're talking 30 or 40,000 years.
Well, and it looks like it needed a lot of rain in order to create that kind of erosion on it, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
We'll be back in a moment. We'll continue talking about the Sphinx. And also Edward Casey, the late great American prophet, once said that there's a hall of records at the base of the Sphinx. And some of your research, let's find out if you stumbled across anything. I happen to think that the Egyptians already know what's in there. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, just about 30 of you jump on board and sponsor a child with Children International. We would have reached our goal early, I might add. If you can afford $18 a month for a one-year commitment to help a child, 60 cents a day, provide needy food, clothing, health care, education, and much more to this child, you will do something not only for the child, but also for yourself, because trust me, you will feel good. I sponsor a six-year-old named Maritza, and she sends a little letter every once in a while that gets translated, because all she can do is speak and write in Spanish. Now, how do you do this? Well, call 1-800-869-9863. That's 1-800-869-9863. Or you can go online, coasttocoastam.com. On the left-hand side, there's a yellow flashing banner. You just click that. That takes you right to their website, and you can sponsor a child that way. I'd like to wrap all this up tonight, if we can. Let's find out what happens. Back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Edward Malkowski, our guest. Edward, I'm looking at the cover of your book, Before the Pharaohs, and the face of the Sphinx that you have there on the cover. The nose looks like it's been blown away. Whatever happened to it? Do we know?
Well, we don't really know, but the best story as far as that goes is, back somewhere after the 6th century A.D., somewhere around the 8th or 9th century, there was people that actually worshipped the Sphinx, and the people who ruled the land at that time wanted to prove to the people that the Sphinx wasn't a god, that it was just a piece of stone. So they actually climbed up there and actually hammered the nose off.
Oh, God. I also heard that I think it was during World War II, did some soldiers take pot shots at it, some of those German soldiers?
I think that the story there is that was when Napoleon was in Egypt.
Napoleon?
That his soldiers took target practice at that. I know during World War II that they had put sandbags all around the Sphinx just in case it did get bombed.
Cannon fire at all?
No, not that I know of.
All right. Well, that nose is pretty well shattered, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Edward Casey said that at the base of the Sphinx, there was a hall of records. Did you ever come across any of that in your research?
I sure did. This goes back to 1991 when Dr. Robert Schock and John West were there with their team. Schock did seismic surveys all around the Sphinx, and that's actually how he determined how old the Sphinx was. And he did say that there was the space underneath the paws of the Sphinx that was hollow. But nothing has been done ever since then. We just don't know what's down there.
See, I think Zahi Hawass and his group have already gone under there, and they've taken it out, and they know some of the secrets of the history of mankind. I just can't believe they wouldn't go down there by now.
Well, that's my personal opinion, too. Zahi Hawass has full access to everything, and I'm sure he's well aware of all the research that has gone on, as far as Chris Dunn's power plant and everything else. And, you know, it kind of seems to me that you know, he would make sense of it all and knows what went on.
Well, you know, there was in the restructuring of the Sphinx and things like that that they've done over the eons, they've also had it shrouded, hidden behind things, so who knows what they've been doing.
That's true.
Okay, now that's one of the three major anomalies related to Egypt that, of course, a lot of your work has done. There's another one in another area of Egypt. Tell me the significance of that near, Nabta Playa? Is that how you pronounce it?
It's Nabta Playa.
Okay.
And this is a very, very bizarre site. Nabta Playa was first discovered in 1973 by the archaeologists Fred Wendorf and Romold Child. And they were just traveling across the desert and came across these megaliths. And, oh, at that time, they did write some articles. They wrote a lot of articles, actually. And they said that there was this, oh, stone circle at the north end of the playa that was astronomically aligned. Not much happened until the late 1990s when a astrophysicist by the name of Dr. Thomas Brophy went there and did some research. And from his analysis, he is saying that there's really six groups of megaliths that emanate from a center point. And at the center point is a very strange carving that looks like a cow. There's three groupings to the north and three groupings to the south. And these stones actually relate to the stars of the constellation Orion. And the north one, when you analyze it and measure it out from the center stone, is exactly equal to the distances from these stars of Orion to Earth. And that the ones to the south are in that same manner, but they relate to the radial velocities of those stars. In other words, how fast those stars are moving away from us.
How would they know this?
Have no idea. The only way that they could know this is that there was a science and a civilization that existed before that they inherited.
And it had to have been an advanced civilization, obviously.
Yeah. But it doesn't stop there. This center stone that's in the shape of a cow, the archaeologist actually thought it was a tombstone. So they removed it and they dug down about 10 meters down to the bedrock.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought they were going to find skeletons or remains of something. But they didn't find a thing, except one thing. And they found another carving down there. And they drew maps of it and everything. And Dr. Brophy had a chance to look at these maps and analyze them. And he's saying that this carving that they found underneath the ground is a map of our galaxy.
Our map of the galaxy.
A map
okay.
of the galaxy.
Now I'm convinced that there's been some extraterrestrial intervention here. I am convinced. It had to have been.
Well,
even an advanced civilization. I mean, there's no way they had the Hubble telescope or one like that, right? Millions of years ago. I mean, they didn't have that kind of technology, or
but,
did
well,
they?
Well, they could have, though. I mean, it's who says that we didn't exist before, like we do now?
But where is it? It's all gone. It can't be buried thousands of feet under the desert, I don't think. To me, somebody came and somebody went. You know, they showed up. They did what they had to do. They stayed for a number of years. They had the technology. They taught it. They used their equipment to build the pyramids. And then they took off for whatever reason. And that to me is fascinating, too, why they would leave. But, I mean, if we had that kind of technology on this planet, even several millions of years ago, don't you think that there would be some history of it somewhere?
Well, not necessarily. If the surface of the planet was completely destroyed, and then life came back, then there wouldn't be no evidence of it. And this is where we start to get into the whole idea of who are we and where we came from. We really don't know.
Do you have
that question?
Yeah, but something tells me you've taken a guess.
Yeah, I think that we've always been here, and that there's a cycle to civilization and a cycle to man that keeps going forever and ever and ever.
How many millions are you? I'm gonna say millions. How old do you think civilizations have been on this planet?
It could be billions. We just don't know for sure.
Billions?
But there was a documentary. There's a new documentary out this year. It's called The Miracle Planet, and it's about evolution. But there's some very interesting concepts that they put forth. They say that our planet has been destroyed completely about six times. And what happens is a large asteroid comes in and collides with Earth, and the energy, the fireball from that collision, in within 24 hours, completely spreads around the Earth, scouring the Earth down to the bedrock, completely vaporizing everything. But the microbes that contain the DNA of life still live down within the rock where it's cool and they're untouched by the heat.
So they kick in again and it starts all over again?
That's correct. The oceans are vaporized, and, you know, this lasts for about 1,000 years. But after 1,000 years, the Earth again starts to cool and the water condenses and comes back and fills the oceans. And these microbes that are now below the ground eventually work their way up back into the water, and then life starts over again.
Well, I've always believed that there's something like that happened on this planet a long time ago. For them, I mean, these megaliths, for them to have that kind of information on them, to me, is astounding.
I agree. Absolutely astounding.
I mean,
it is. It's fantastic.
You know, it is. It's exciting to think about those possibilities. Are you aware of a guy? He's dead now. His name was Edward Leed Skolnin. He built an incredible facility in Homestead, Florida, moving huge blocks of coral, huge, by himself, claiming that he knew the secrets of the pyramids.
That's correct. And his secret is, as far as I know it, he was saying that everything that exists as an object, that's actual matter, has a certain magnetism to it. And if you had a device that would harmonize with that magnetism, you could get whatever that object is to levitate. And he that's how he says that he built the Coral Castle, and he also says that's how the Egyptians built the pyramids.
Or somebody built a pyramid.
Or somebody, yeah, correct.
Absolutely. Your title of your book is Before the Pharaohs. Tell me a little bit about what was then before the pharaohs. In your opinion, what do you think was roaming this planet around that area that we call Egypt?
Okay. From what archaeologists and anthropologists say, they say that we, where we are now, anatomically modern humans, have been around for about 200,000 years. Now, you can stretch that out a bit and say that we've been around for 2 million years, because Homo erectus was pretty close to being human. Not quite, but pretty close. So what I think happened is that about 100,000 years ago, a civilization started in South Africa.
Okay. What kind of technology at that time?
At that time, we really don't know.
All right. Low-tech or high-tech?
I would say low-tech.
All right.
But as time went on, they built a civilization, and they moved north through Africa, and they wound up creating their civilization in and around the Mediterranean Sea. Now, at that time, the sea didn't look like it is today. I think that it was probably a series of great lakes, freshwater lakes. So it would be an ideal place to build a civilization. So that's where they built it. And this occurred approximately 70,000 years ago.
Okay.
And that civilization expanded in different areas. It expanded to the east, it expanded to the west, and expanded into Western Europe. But about 10,000 years ago, there was a huge cataclysm. And this is a geologic fact. 10,000 years ago, we have many species going extinct. So there was some kind of cataclysm that happened all across the Earth.
Call it an ice age. We got hit by an object. Something happened.
Right. Right. Something happened. That's a geologic fact. And, well, you know, if something happened to the entire plant and all the animals, we have to assume that it also happened to mankind. So civilization was in essence, destroyed at that time. And in my opinion, this kind of solves the Cro-Magnon mystery of Western Europe, because this civilization extended from North Africa all the way through Western Europe and you know, several hundred miles to the east. And where Cro-Magnon man came from 40,000 years ago in Western Europe has been a big mystery. They haven't been able to figure it out. Well, if you assume that they came from the south, like a lot of researchers are now starting to believe, and moved north and created a civilization in North Africa, Mediterranean, and then that civilization was destroyed, then it would appear that the Cro-Magnon in Western Europe kind of appeared from nowhere. And that's exactly what we see today. One of the fascinating ruins that really boggles the mind is in Lebanon. It's called Baalbek.
Oh, yes, which could have been a landing pad.
Well, I don't know about that.
That's what I hear.
But the temple there has been built over by the Greeks and the Romans. And the original foundation, really, they don't know who built it. And there's these three huge stones. They call it the Trilithon. Each stone weighs 1,200 tons, not pounds, but tons. And there's even one stone that weighs that much that's still left in the quarry.
And they were brought there, right?
That's correct. So you start putting all these pieces together. You have the ruins of Baalbek. You have the Giza power plant. You have Nabta Playa. You know, you start putting together all these mysteries, and you say, aha, there was this civilization there at one time.
A long time ago.
A very long time ago.
Do you think they had flying machines then, Edward?
I don't know. I know there's some hieroglyphs at Abydos where they say there's a helicopter and a submarine. And
right,
I know,
I've seen that.
And I know that the people of India have a tradition that there were flying machines, but the evidence is kind of scanty on that.
Well, there's something dramatic happened on this planet. There is no doubt about that. Do you get much support in some of your theories? Because you are unconventional in this thing.
Oh, not really.
You're out there hanging, huh?
Well, yeah. See, this is kind of a problem, but I really don't view it as a problem. It's kind of how science works. You have orthodox theories, and you have non-orthodox theories. And those non-orthodox theories, well, some are going to be good and some are going to be bad. Those that seem to work out and pass the test of time do go on to become orthodox theories, let's say, you know, 50 or 100 years into the future. And it's just kind of how science works. You have a theory, you put it forth, it gets attacked, and if it's really good and survives that attack, it goes on to be a valid theory.
The science involved in Egypt thousands of years ago must have been monumental.
Absolutely.
Had to have been.
Absolutely. Egypt is the most successful civilization ever. They were prolific in their building. And, you know, that really hasn't been explained.
No, and it's very possible that something happened. And it could. What are the possibilities of a nuclear explosion caused by warring factions hundreds of thousands of years ago?
Well, it's possible. You know, as far as I'm concerned and history is concerned, really all is theory, and every theory is valid. And it is possible that thousands, and actually if you're talking about nuclear war, I would think more like millions of years ago, that, you know, there was a nuclear war and that everything was completely destroyed.
And what's left is our very faint memories. Do you believe in reincarnation? Because if you do, maybe that's one way of finding out what happened.
Well, yeah, I sort of believe in reincarnation, but I don't think it's the popular interpretation of reincarnation.
Well, I wonder how many of our coast-to-coast listeners believe that the pyramids were built by just Egyptians and their manpower, some kind of technology, or extraterrestrial help. So we'll find out in a moment. Our guest is Edward Malkowski. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.